This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 13th of November, 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 13th of November, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. Your reader today, Nikki Baring.
Hello.
And me, Keith Vincent, and I'll also be operating the computer recording and hoping to push all the right buttons and in the right order. The main headlines this week: launch of fresh plan for Silver Hill, objections flood in to water garden scheme, and raising spirits and funds in a world first. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Launch of fresh plan for Silver Hill. The City Council is being pressed to delegate its biggest and most troubled regeneration project to a community trust. A group of nine local professionals are demanding that chiefs pass over their responsibilities for Silver Hill, now known as Central Winchester Regeneration Project, CWRP. Former councillor Kim Gottlieb, who derailed the scheme in 2016 and condemned the latest proposals, is spearheading the movement. He looks to form a trust comprising local professionals to ensure the development is carried out this time. Something similar has been proposed for the Bar End depot. "Once again, clouds loom over Silver Hill," he said in a letter, also signed by John Andrews, Rose Burns, Francis Holly, Joanna Lewis, Arthur Morgan, Andy Smith, Tony Walker and Martin Wilson. "We thought that the 2018 Supplementary Planning Document, SPD, took a big step forwards in the life of the city. Sadly, our hopes have been dashed by an uninspired proposal just revealed by the City Council. Gone is the idea of having several different developers pitch for parts of the site so as to avoid a uniform approach. Instead, by teaming up with just one developer, the council risks a rerun of the Henderson debacle." At Cabinet on Tuesday, November the 10th, where the latest plans were approved for consultation, Mr. Gottlieb and other councillors criticised their vagueness. "The document roughly shows which parts of the area will be used for what, but specific buildings are yet to be delegated a purpose. For example, the council wishes to improve the nightlife for younger people, but has not earmarked which buildings will be bars, clubs." Mr. Gottlieb added, "However, I think it would be a mistake to effectively sterilise the site for 10 years and to retain King's Walk for that period or longer. That shows a lack of ambition, and Winchester really does deserve better. All in all, the overall proposal for Silver Hill is too vague and inadequate and too full of pitfalls, and I would encourage you, as strongly as I can, to go back and to rethink it again." Cabinet members unanimously agreed to sign off on the plans. Councillor Fiona Mather suggested that another consultation period is not necessary and described CWRP as the most consulted project ever. "When I told my ward members that another consultation phase was to come, they were in disbelief," she said. "I think we need to get on with it. It's been long enough." Plans to develop the Silver Hill area were first mentioned in 1996. Over the last two decades, the council has faced many obstacles, including the legal battle with Mr. Gottlieb. The High Court ruled the council unlawfully handled the scheme by failing to invite bids from more than one developer.
Objections flood in to water garden scheme. It has quickly become one of the most controversial planning applications Winchester has ever seen. Alan Stone's proposals to build a house on Water Garden off Colebrook Street are still receiving dozens of objections a day. The total now sits at 674 as of Tuesday, with prominent members of the community adding their names to the list. Vice Dean of Winchester, the Reverend Canon Dr. Roland Ream, is one of them. He said, "The approach to the cathedral through the 15th century Bishop's Gate is a journey of unfolding delight and discovery. Initially, one walks past a flint and stone wall behind raised flower beds with a view of the east side of the large house concealed behind mature trees. Under the proposals, the north part of this wall would be pierced by two windows, and the new cottage would rise above it, which would detract considerably from the essential horticultural charm of the approach. Then comes the two piers where the watercourse interrupts the wall, and between them over the stream is the first glimpse of the upper parts of the cathedral, a foretaste of the more expansive views to be enjoyed once one enters the actual close. The charm of the approach to the cathedral will be irretrievably diminished. He added that the garden was created by former MP Sir Peter Smithers as a gift to the city he served for 14 years, and should therefore remain untouched. The chapter, the governing body at Winchester Cathedral, has also written in support of Dr. Ream's letter. The City of Winchester Trust has publicly objected, and now its vice chairman, Michael Carden, has too. In his letter he said, "For well over half a century this remarkable garden has been enjoyed by local people and visitors alike, using the path through Water Close on their way between the centre of the city and the Cathedral Close. Designed solely for public enjoyment by the owner, an eminent horticulturalist, assisted by his friend the cathedral architect, and carefully maintained by subsequent owners. It should itself have been listed, but no one seems to have appreciated that it needed protection until acquired for development. Of course, the designer has used every possible means to try to hide the proposed house, fully aware it should not be there. But it would nevertheless destroy the symmetry and tranquility of the garden and spoil the ambiance of Water Close, because it effectively roofs and also punctures with windows one half of the attractive wall that is part of the symmetrical design." The deadline for making comment was yesterday, Wednesday, November the 11th, and there have been two letters of support. And there's a picture of the water garden, a sort of haven of peace and tranquility, with lovely brick and flint walls at the back of the garden.
Second and third one, raising spirits and funds in a world first. It may not have been the usual sight of crowds of people gathered round to enjoy the fireworks, but Winchester Roundtable battled against all odds to host a world first. Organisers reimagined the event as Light Up Winchester after cancelling the traditional torchlight procession display and bonfire at River Park. After the government announced lockdown 2, volunteers were given special permission for a small number of people to leave their houses for a limited number of hours on Saturday night to put on its annual fireworks night. At 7 p.m, the first firework launched and a huge cheer erupted in the city centre. An announcement went out to thank the NHS workers, teachers and essential services, which was followed by a loud applause. Using a combination of torches and wax candles, members of the public were asked to raise their lights into the sky at the same time as the display. A live stream of both the fireworks and the streets lit up by the public was broadcasted, with views from across the world, including Ireland, Belgium, Argentina, Belize, Singapore, Canada, Australia, South Africa, India and more. A roundtable spokesperson said, "Thank you to everyone in the city and around the world who were part of Winchester's socially distanced firework night in the country, a world first. Each year the event raises thousands for charities and organisations, with this year being no different as over £32,000 has so far been raised." John Leeson, member of Winchester's roundtable, added, "Since Saturday's event, I have spoken to many people who have taken the time and trouble to thank us for lighting up Winchester, which, although compared with the usual torchlit parade, bonfire and fireworks, was not the full extravaganza of previous years, it did provide some oohs and ahs despite lockdown. The total money raised for the event will be considerably down, but nonetheless the local community has given generously." And there's a lot of photographs of obviously beautiful fireworks lighting up the sky and people standing outside their houses with candles and sparklers and small torches watching the fireworks in the sky from their houses.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So I'll start with the death announcements this week. Cockman, Jennifer May Cockman, died at home on the 20th of October. Cox, Frank Cox, known as Joe, died on the 3rd of November, aged 95. Davis, Charles George Henry Davis, who was a former teacher at Stanmore School and then head teacher at Copythorne School, died on the 13th of October, aged 96. Denham, Elsie Pamela Denham, died peacefully at home in the Dower House, aged 95. Forbes, Catherine Forbes, died peacefully at home on the 20th of October, aged 89. Hobbs, Roy Hobbs, died on the 23rd of October, aged 89. Joyce, Colin Roy Joyce, JP, died peacefully on the 25th of October, aged 74. Plumpton, Craig Plumpton, died peacefully on the 25th of October. Powell, Angela Powell, née Partridge, died at home, on the 28th of October. Robbins, Wendy Robbins, died peacefully in Winchester Hospital on the 1st of November. Thorne, Elizabeth Ann Thorne, died peacefully on the 3rd of November, aged 73. And Winfield, Joyce Elizabeth Winfield, née Thomas, died peacefully at home, aged 86. And now we move on to Christian comment, please, Nikki.
And this is Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church, headed Character Matters. Like many, I watched last week's news coverage of the US election with growing fascination and concern. Whatever else is on the new president's agenda, it will be a major task to address some of the bitter lines of division seen over the past few months. In the midst of all the drama, these words from Van Jones on CNN caught the attention of many around the world. It's easier to be a parent this morning. It's easier to be a dad. It's easier to tell your kids that character matters. The truth matters. Being a good person matters. Despite the politics of the situation, in his emotional outburst, he reminded me of something that goes far deeper than any elections. Presidents might last for a few years, but character is lifelong. Author and TED speaker Simon Sinek suggests that the three most valuable qualities any leader can cultivate are selflessness, empathy, and grace under fire. More than any practical skills or physical achievements, Sinek says leadership is about setting the tone. When the environment is one of a leader who will sacrifice, the way people respond is by sacrificing in return. Being a leader is a lifestyle decision. It means you're willing to take care of others. This is the kind of lifestyle also encouraged by the Apostle Paul in several of his New Testament letters. This passage from Colossians captures it well. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And that's Colossians 3:12-13. Early Christians drew deeply from Paul's challenging teaching as they faced fierce persecution. Without doubt, they looked to Jesus as their role model and to the Holy Spirit for their strength. As believers today, we are encouraged to do the same, and Jesus doesn't ask his followers to do anything he wasn't prepared to do himself. When he declared, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." In Matthew 16:24, he knew only too well that he would soon be making the ultimate sacrifice. Character doesn't just happen. It takes time and will always cost us something. Qualities like selflessness, patience, and empathy are forged in the furnaces of everyday life. It's as we find ways to overcome setbacks that our character grows. When we encounter people with very different views from ourselves, we are faced with a crucial decision. How will we treat them? What could we learn? It's in those situations that, to quote from a friend of mine, we have to decide to act as if we're the most mature person in the room, and even when we don't feel like it. And in every one of these costly moments is where our character continues to grow. And that's Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Now we move on to the letters to the editor, and we start with three letters regarding the headline article about the water garden proposals. The first one from Jock MacDonald in Stockbridge Road. Sir, it is ironic that at the very time when new plans for Winchester City are stressing the joys and benefits of walking in beautiful surroundings, a relative newcomer to the town is bent on destroying one of its jewels. As one walks past the little garden beside Water Close, one can see that its rivulet, magnolias and fine stonework are a lovely reflection of Winchester's close relationship with the hills and streams of its countryside and the many fine trees in the town itself. The fact that over 650 people have now objected to the plans for Water Close shows how many Wintonians know and love their city. Many, too, are experts in architecture, planning and business. They should be put to good, hands-on use by our city council. Like so many other local authorities, it is impoverished and needs all the resources it can get in driving forward the changes that are so necessary and particular to Winchester. Other cities, Oxford for example, are doing this to face their particular problems. We are indeed in a rapidly changing world, and we all have to adapt in our own localised ways. And that was from Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Sir, adding to the views already expressed by correspondents to the Hampshire Chronicle over past weeks, to which I entirely agree, there is another aspect of the water garden to consider. This area of Winchester is designed to incorporate Victorian houses. The application to erect a dwelling on the water garden site would be entirely out of character with the rest of the houses and would stand out like a sore thumb. The Planning Committee of Winchester City Council should very carefully consider all objections before making a decision. And that from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And the third letter regarding the water garden proposal. Sir, having read the article in the Hampshire Chronicle on October the 29th concerning the application to build on the site of the water gardens off Colebrook Street, I would like to add my protest to that of Christopher McCall and others. We are constantly being told that the benefits to the public of green spaces in towns, and this is a particularly lovely garden of which Winchester should be proud. I urge the City Council to reject the plans completely. And that letter's from Jill Bentley, The Paddock, Kingsworthy.
And this one headed Mad World. Sir, I applied a generous helping of antiseptic hand gel offered in C&H Fabrics on the High Street. But unfortunately, as a result, my pinky ring slipped from my finger somewhere between the shop, M&S corner and the walk past Sainsbury and to the car park at St Clement's Surgery. Gent's gold black onyx with small inlaid diamond. I believe the majority of people, to be honest, so rang Hampshire Constabulary to establish which police station it could have been handed into and was amazed to be told that the nearest to Winchester is Basingstoke. Naturally, I would not expect even the most honest citizen to travel to Basingstoke to lodge lost property with the police. Can it really be true that a city such as Winchester does not have a police station? The world is going mad. That from Graham Petty, Woodpeckers Drive, Week, Winchester.
This letter from Karen Barrett. Rules favour phone operators. Sir, reading your report, New Battle Over Proposed Mast, Chronicle November the 5th, was definitely a déjà vu moment for me. The technical justifications from the telecom operator's agent versus the health concerns and sighting objections of residents were only too familiar. I still have an extensive archive relating to the high-profile Byron Avenue battle against Orange, which started in December 2000 and lasted almost 5 years, involving a judicial review application against Winchester City Council, a redetermination of its original permission, a lengthy but eventually victorious Orange appeal, and campaigners' subsequently failed High Court and Appeal Court action. Our campaign was costly and stressful, but quite an education. The Labour government at the time had benefited from auctioning 3G licences to the telecoms, and the planning process was designed to enable the speedy rollout of the network. Lip service was paid to the consideration of possible health effects by producing Department of Health warning leaflets and telling the telecoms not to market mobile phones to children under 16. The situation with 5G, And the current government is much the same. Changes in planning regulations favour developers in general, and telecoms in particular, where full planning permission requirements have largely been replaced by permitted development, which limits the opportunity for community dissent. The more concerning aspect of the technology these days is the environmental impact of digital data storage centres with their huge and largely unsustainable energy requirements. And that letter's from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this one headed Heartfelt Thanks. Sir, may I please, through your columns, thank our wonderful NHS for all the care and attention they gave me recently. Firstly, to Grattan Surgery in Sutton Scotney, who fitted me into their very tight schedule, quickly and accurately diagnosed my heart problem and getting me booked into RHCH. Secondly, to all the staff at the hospital for the admission area, to the McGill ward, all the nurses, day and night staff, excuse me, admin, hygiene, cleaning and catering personnel, not forgetting the surgical staff who kept tabs on my diagnostic results and confirmed my problem. Thirdly, to the ambulance service, who expertly whisked me up to the Basingstoke North Hants Hospital at close to midnight. Finally, to the CCU staff in the Sherburn wing for their care and attention, and to the surgical staff who quickly put me at ease and speedily and expertly installed my little box. I cannot believe that in these difficult times, with all the COVID pressures, constant demand for hospital beds, having to kit out PPE for every patient, and observing strict hygiene rules, everyone manages to keep sane, smile, and be so patient and cheerful. Mask wearing is strictly monitored, and the wards are kept scrupulously clean. The food is excellent and delicious. What is there to complain about? The TV and papers are full of doom and gloom. COVID-19, stay-at-home rules and self-isolating, shutdowns and the effect on the NHS with more problems to come with a month's lockdown. That may be true, but in the safety of the hospital ward, you get no idea of the problems they cheerfully face daily. They are truly exceptional. Thank you, NHS. And that's from David Tate, Meadowland, Kingsworthy.
And the last letter is entitled Cowdown. So it is regrettable that this section of the River Itchen at Itchen Abbas has had to be fenced off. The owners have, for many years, allowed it to be used for paddling and picnicking and have tried hard to avoid closure. I'm not surprised that patience has run out. Mine would have long ago. The recent hot summers particularly have attracted too many troublemakers, mostly but not entirely young people who've displayed appalling behaviour which they appear to consider pretty cool and great fun. Anyone challenging this idea has been treated to threatening and abusive behaviour and the kind of vocabulary possibly unfamiliar to children enjoying a paddle. Not content with the section of river fenced off for their use, boundaries have been ignored, horseplay indulged in, and wading, swimming and even canoeing have damaged both the riverbanks and the bed. Following their departure, there's also been the inevitable litter, including broken glass and excrement on the banks and surrounding area. Even some of the young mums appear not to have been blameless, as dirty nappies have been found festooning the bushes. I've worked with offenders for many years, and I'm no stranger to bad behaviour and foul language, but I know the difference between that and high spirits. We have so few chalk streams, and anyone concerned with the environment must be aware of the need to look after them, as they are already suffering a high degree of pollution and other problems. One would expect such people to be in favour of this move at Cowdown. Furthermore, those against it have not, I presume, been subject, as many have, to the foul mouths and intimidating behaviour, not just from the few, which has given rise with the damage caused to the decision to fence off the area. And that letter was from Pat Brockway, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy. That concludes the letters. We now move on to Chronicle editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Headed Last Orders at the Bar, Please. Winchester City Council really is drinking in the last chance saloon when it comes to Silver Hill, also known as Saxongate, and the pithy Central Winchester Regeneration Project. No space here to go into the history of the redevelopment, whose roots stretch as far back as the late 1980s, with stagecoaches first moves to redevelop its bus station. Safe to say, the scheme has had more than its share of false starts and mishaps. So we wearily welcome the latest news that the council has put forward outline plans based on its central Winchester Regeneration Area supplementary planning document. Some people are still unhappy. But as we have said before, a perfect scheme is impossible, and the best is the enemy of the good. It would be helpful if there was realism across the board. For instance, there is not going to be a two-year archaeological dig, as there was in the 1987-88 at the Brooks, unless an extremely wealthy philanthropist comes on board. But the City Council must get this scheme right. Another false start, and the city's reputation will be damaged forever.
Thank you. Now we move on to the first person article by this week by Khalid Aziz. And it's headed, "No Such Thing as a Free Lunch." What do I have in common with Marcus Rashford? Well, those close to me will know it's not footballing prowess. Keepy-uppy is a skill I've never developed, nor wanted to. However, we are kindred spirits, having both been in receipt of free school meals. In my day, we called them school dinners, but then we also had tea rather than supper, and the concept of dinner in the evening was restricted pretty well to toffs. Back in 1960, school dinners were execrable, often cooked in central kitchens and transported to schools in aluminium trays and vats, uninsulated to ensure the food arrived at around 11 o'clock, already cool, only to drop further in temperature when served up unappetisingly an hour and a half later at what we then called dinner time. I can thank school dinners for a visceral dislike of cabbage, custard and gravy, which took decades for me to grow out of. Meat, when available, was cooked to within an inch of its life, any inherent tenderness boiled out of it. Thick, unyielding slabs of liver were also served up regularly. It took a trip to Paris in my 20s to discover that offal could be a delicacy. Still, who was I to complain? After all, they were free calories. The affluent had to fork out a pre-decimalisation shilling a day, 5 pence in today's money, and woe betide anyone who didn't pitch up on a Monday morning with 5 shillings in cash to be handed over to and accounted for by the form teacher. We poor sat at our own table in the echoing dining hall. This for the administrative ease of the teachers, impervious to the obvious stigma created, which often then spilled over to the playground when bullies were looking for some new psychological terror to inflict on top of the quotidian duffing up. I qualified because my mother was remarried to a man who ensured any family income went primarily on his favourite pursuits, involving alcohol, tobacco and gambling. Free school meals were a way of ensuring us poor kids were fed, at least during term time. Today it's very different. Whenever I've visited state schools, the food seems to be infinitely better. Boris has now decided the lockdown holiday meal scheme should be extended to Christmas, and include giving disadvantaged children extra by the way of as yet unspecified Yuletide cheer, all at a cost to the taxpayer of £400 million. But who can be against it? At the very least, it's a gesture towards solving that age-old conundrum. How do you save children from feckless parents? These days, no cash is involved. It's all done by voucher, supposedly a fraud countermeasure. That hasn't stopped some determined parents. There have been reports of stand-up shouting matches at supermarket tills when cashiers suggested vouchers should not be exchanged for cigarettes and other contraband. It's also suggested the vouchers are welcomed by drug dealers, who apparently are adept at voucher laundering. Young Marcus may have persuaded the Prime Minister, but there seems little evidence his message has struck home with his twinkle-toed colleagues. It's been calculated that if every Premier League footballer contributed 1% of their income, it would raise over £1.3 million a week. Add in the managers, agents and other overpaid hangers-on, and pretty soon you've got a big number, as President Reagan used to say. Finally, speaking of presidents, perhaps spare a thought for the vulgarian Donald J. Trump in his hour of sorrow. But then again, perhaps not. And now we have an article from Belgarum, Nikki.
OK, and this is about the reconstruction of the weirs. Work is nearly complete on the work to restore the bank of the River Itchen along the weirs in Winchester. blue-coloured flood defence material is being used to keep the water away whilst contractors put in fresh wood to embank the river. The last time the flood defences were used was back in 2014, when the army used them to hold back floodwater on Park Avenue and North Walls by the School of Art. The project has been running through the summer and Belgarum has asked the City Council about details of the work. And there's photographs of this extraordinary sort of barricade of plastic holding the river back while there's quite a big gap and they are repairing the walls behind it. I'm amazed this plastic can actually hold the water back. It's obviously very efficient.
Lighting up time ends on Friday the 13th of November at 7:19 a.m. and begins at 4:19 p.m. And next Wednesday the 18th of November it ends at 7:28 a.m. and begins at 4:13 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legris on 01962 861229. That's Liz on 01962 861229. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed, call to divert countryside footpaths to avert deaths. Countryside campaigners say farmers should be allowed to divert footpaths following a rise in livestock-related deaths. Rural groups claim an amendment to the Highways Act 1980 would cut the risk of further accidents involving visitors walking across farmland. They are calling for farmers to be given the right to temporarily divert public rights of way where livestock are present. The New Forest has seen several incidents in which walkers have been badly injured by cows and other animals. Dog owner Amelia Borelli was attacked near Fritham after accidentally coming between a cow and her calf, which was hidden by bushes. The cow plunged its horn into her leg, which resulted in Amelia spending a week in hospital. In another incident, a herd of cows was reported to have been slaughtered after an attack put a dog walker in hospital and killed one of his pets. New organisations, including the Country Land and Business Association and the National Farmers Union, have written to Rural Affairs Minister Lord Gardiner following a series of incidents across the country. Mark Tufnell, Deputy President of the CLA, said, "We believe our proposal will save lives. Our priority is people's safety, and by amending the Highways Act, landowners will be empowered to take the necessary steps to protect the public." Stuart Roberts, Deputy President of the NFU, added, "Changing the law would allow farmers to quickly, easily and temporarily divert public rights of way to reduce further risks." James Legg, Head of Politics at the Countryside Alliance, said, "The current Highways Act fails to balance the needs of farmers and land managers to raise livestock while also being able to take necessary steps to protect public safety. The government needs to act to ensure the law is fair and workable and most importantly helps prevent any further tragic loss of life." Robert Martin of the Tenant Farmers Association added, "The devastating loss of life could be prevented easily by taking the simple and reasonable approach we have outlined." And there are a couple of photographs, one of a signpost saying public footpath, and one of a really quite belligerent-looking cow. It could be a bull. I would not want to walk through the field with that particular cow looking at me.
Remembrance in Winchester. Socially distanced service honours fallen war heroes. Remembrance Sunday has looked a little bit different everywhere this year, but in Winchester, people still made an effort to mark the occasion and pay their respects. Across the country, the usual annual parades and services have had to be cancelled or scaled back as a result of coronavirus restrictions. Usually thousands would gather at Winchester Cathedral to take part in the city's annual Remembrance Sunday service, but this year the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, held a service alongside members of the cathedral clergy, which was live-streamed to the public. Wreaths were then laid in front of the war memorial by a small number of civic dignitaries, including the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, along with the service personnel and representatives from local organisations. Throughout the Winchester district, residents also stood on their doorsteps at 11 a.m. to share in a united 2-minute silence. Following the service, people are now invited to lay wreaths by the city's war memorial, or crosses can be placed in the nearby Royal British Legion Garden of Remembrance. City MP Steve Bryan was not part of the official ceremony, but laid a wreath shortly afterwards. The railings of Winchester Cathedral have been lined with poppies. Sue Butcher sewed hundreds of poppies onto a 26-metre-long stretch of netting. She also made a hanging wall, which is in Debenhams' side window. She told the Chronicle, "I wanted to show Winchester that we care and will always remember the fallen. I've been a member of the women's section for over 20 years and have been chairman in Winchester for 18 years. I've been Hampshire County chairman for 2 years. I've never been in the service, but always support them. And it took a long time to sew all 26 metres of poppies onto the nets." Meanwhile, St Andrew's Church in Oslebury held a socially distanced Remembrance Day service. Youngsters also took part in remembrance as First Kingsworthy Guides, Rainbows, Brownies and Rangers made nearly 100 ceramic poppies to be displayed at St Mary's Church, Kingsworthy. They were shaped and cooked at home via Zoom in their weekly meetings. Children from Henry's Kindergarten and Hairstock Primary School created 60 handcrafted poppies from painted salt dough, which were unveiled outside Barclay Homes development at Knight's Quarter. And there are plenty of pictures showing the cathedral and the wall of poppies with Sue Butcher stood there in front of them, school children with the poppies at Knight's Quarter, the Bishop of Winchester and the Dean of Winchester carrying wreaths to lay at the memorial, and the Vice Lord Lieutenant laying a wreath during the service. And of course there's a picture of the Dean of Winchester during the remembrance service inside the cathedral, which was live streamed.
The future is kelp. A Winchester startup company is looking to help the whole world. Carbon Capture claims it has a secret weapon to tackle pollution which is hiding along shorelines and in the ocean. Kelp. The aim is to combat the climate crisis by extracting carbon from the atmosphere through kelp farms. Kelp is such an underrated product, said Managing Director Howard Gunstock. Not only can it feed us and our animals, but it's used in bioplastics, medicine, cosmetics, and it's also leading the way in the fight against dementia. Our goal is to have a global network of kelp farms extracting millions of tons of carbon from the ocean and atmosphere by 2030. Kelp is a seaweed that grows 30 times faster than trees and is highly efficient at storing carbon. Mr. Gunstock is working alongside learning and development strategist and long-standing green activist Dave Walker Nix. The pair met in Winchester at the screening of Climate Race in 2019. They are currently crowdfunding to purchase a number of UK farms before the end of the year. Mr. Gunstock added, "As a startup, funding is a key part of our success to get started with our first set of farms. The insight we have received is streets ahead of the consultancies I have worked with in my career. We believe from a strategic perspective, it gives us an edge that only very few organisations in any industry have. Carbon Capture's goal is for a global network of farms by 2030. And there is a photograph of them actually rooting around in a pile of kelp, which is really not a very attractive thing to look at, just brown ribbons. And I remember the smell as a child of the kelp on the sea beach.
Indeed. COVID-19, all the latest numbers. Around 350 people are being treated for COVID-19 in Hampshire hospitals, it was revealed on Tuesday, with 15 to 16 patients on ventilators. Health bosses said hospitals are coping. Dr. Andrew Bishop said, "We have between 3,000 to 4,000 hospital beds in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and at the moment there's about 350 patients in these beds who are suffering with COVID. And we have about 150 intensive care beds, and the number of patients on ventilators due to COVID is around 15 or 16. If all we had to do was COVID, we'd be well within our capacity, but it would be misleading to suggest that it's not on the increase, and that it is a significant increase from this time last month. The issue is that is not the only thing going on in our hospitals. Our hospitals are now experiencing the pressure we usually see at this time of year. The total number of positive cases in Hampshire as of Tuesday was 12,963. A total of 1,771 cases was recorded over the past 7 days, and the weekly rate for Hampshire is now 130.2 per 100,000, while England's is 245.2. New cases have been reported in the last week at Westgate, Wickham, St Faith's and Bishop Swartham schools. The recent steep rise in COVID numbers in Winchester District has levelled off. In the last 7 days to Tuesday, there have been 165, compared with 184 in the previous 7 days. This is the first time for months that the older figure have been higher. The total is now 1,318, an infection rate of 1,055 per 100,000 people since the start of the crisis. Data shows that the infection rate in the Winchester district in the 7 days to November the 5th is 158.6 people for every 100,000. It's the fourth highest in Hampshire after Portsmouth, Southampton and Havant.
Meon MP visits village charity shop. Meon Valley's MP visited a non-profit community project that donates unwanted items to those in need. Pre-Loved Treasures, based in New Road, Swanmore, was started during lockdown in the spring. Flick Drummond learned how it takes donated items and asked for a financial donation from those who wish to take them. However, if the recipient can't afford anything, then the item is in turn donated to them. Any money made is donated to other charities. This is a really lovely community-based project that is helping those in need by recycling unwanted items, and I would like to thank Maria, Carl and their volunteer team for all they have done to be a real help and an inspiration to their community during these difficult times, said Ms. Drummond, who met project leaders Maria Dores and Carl Channon and volunteer Steve Powell last week. Local County Councillor Roger Huckstep was also there. Ms. Drummond added, "We have a tough winter ahead, and for local people to be able to go to this shop, find good quality items, and either donate a little or simply receive them will help many who are struggling. If anyone has unwanted items for the project, then please get in touch with Pre-Loved Treasures on Facebook." At the time of the visit, the shop had wedding dresses, local school uniforms, and a variety of other clothes and toys.
Estates developer must fix footpath. The muddy path leading to Winchester's newest school is set to be resurfaced, but the County Council does not know when. Councillor Rob Humby told the Chronicle that the ridgeway used by Barton Farm Academy pupils is not the Council's responsibility. Instead, it will be improved by the developers at King's Barton, Carla Holmes. Councillor Humby said, "I understand that some parents have concerns about the route to the new Barton Farm Primary School, which is at the northern part of the development. For the small number of families currently coming from the southern end via a path. While we understand the housing developers will be putting in internal walking and cycling paths to link the two parts of the development, the timing of this, along with the timing of each of the housing phases, is the decision of the developers. We're asking them to provide a temporary pedestrian link in the meantime, and our highways teams will be clearing overgrown vegetation on the Andover Road footway as soon as possible. We're looking at priorities for a number of suggested travel and transport improvements for the local area which could be funded by the developers' contributions, payments for which are being staggered in line with the phasing of the development." The Chronicle has contacted Carla for a comment and awaits a response.
Author overcomes lockdown challenge. Ossobree author Nigel White has completed his lockdown goal. The 64-year-old has written and produced his new novel, his third, within 6 months. According to Nigel, the project seemed impossible under the circumstances, but was greeted enthusiastically by Winchester printers Sarsen Press. "Sarsen had produced my first two novels," said Nigel, "so we did have the advantage of having worked together before, and that helped a great deal." Inspired by a short story written for the Village Facebook page, Suggestion is a 200-page historical romance set in Ossobree and Morstead. I wanted to explore the dynamics of a relationship between an 18th century tavern keeper's daughter and a highwayman, said Nigel. But as has happened before, the characters took on a life of their own. Nigel was also fortunate to have two artists in the village upon whose talents he could draw for the book cover and the colour frontispiece. I have to thank Eleanor Belton and Kathy Fox for seeming to understand exactly what I wanted, he said. Their work complements the novel perfectly. Asked about his writing history, Nigel of Wadden Lane explained he was given his first adult novel at the age of 11 by his English teacher, Angela Kirby. It was Jamaica Inn. Mrs. Kirby told me I was ready to read grown-up books, and that was the beginning. I went on to writing my own short stories and articles, but it was a long wait for my first novel, which was published in 2017. I remember the huge thrill of actually holding the first copy in my hand. A fourth novel is already underway. In the meantime, Suggestion is readily available from eBay. His first novel, Get Him Out, proved to be so controversial in its content that following publisher's advice, it is now only available from the author. And there is a photograph of him, it says, at his day job at Ostlebury Garage and Recovery. And it just says author Nigel Wright recovering a Renault Clio. What they don't say is he's actually recovering it from what looks like a pond. It's not just a broken down car. He's having a real thing to get it out of this pond and onto his lorry. And another one of him holding a Bible and next door his book Suggestion.
City Rotarians and schools unite for Christmas appeal. Every year, local Rotary clubs coordinate the Christmas shoebox appeal. Despite the strictures of COVID-19, collections from four of the five Winchester schools have been made by Rotary coordinators Colin Cook, Maggie Hasty and Justin Adgar. All the schools have increased the number of boxes from last year. With further donations from local supporters of the annual appeal, Rotary members and members of the Inner Wheel of Winchester, Rotary is hopeful of some 400 shoeboxes, decorated and filled with presents for disadvantaged children in four countries in Eastern Europe: Albania, Moldova, Montenegro and Romania. The primary schools taking part this year are Compton, St Bede, St Faith's, Week and Weston. Once the boxes have been rested for COVID-19 reasons, they will be checked by Rotary members and sorted into cartons according to age and category, and then dispatched to the Wessex Rotary District Depot in Christchurch to be added to the donations collected by some 50 Rotary clubs throughout Wessex and the Channel Islands. In all, it's expected that 25,000 present-filled shoeboxes will be sent by lorry across Europe to various destinations before Christmas. Generous support has been given this year in the form of pens, pencils and rubbers to add to the box by Warren Stationers in the High Street. In addition to the very generous annual donation of some 150 woollen jumpers knitted by the Lace Makers, Four Marks WI and others, coordinated by Hilary Dunwoody. And there's a picture of a garage full of brightly coloured shoeboxes, all been covered in Christmas wrapping paper, and some being loaded into a car for transport to the distribution centre.
Fears of rising cruelty. The RSPCA has expressed fears of a second spike in cruelty and crimes against wildlife in the new lockdown. The charity has revealed it received reports of more than 2,200 incidents of cruelty to wildlife in 2020, with numbers spiking in May. From hunting and fighting to beating and mutilation, incidents of illegal activity and intentional harm to wildlife animals started rising at the start of the lockdown in March with 194 incidents and April with 241 incidents, peaking in May with 381. In Hampshire, there were 58 incidents made up of counts of illegal activity, 30, and 28 counts of intentional harm. The charity is concerned that as the nation goes into lockdown again and many things shut down, some may turn to this behaviour for entertainment and incidents may rise. RSPCA National Wildlife Coordinator Jeff Edmund said, Our data shows that reports of cruelty to wildlife surged during the first lockdown. We fear a similar peak could happen all over again during this second lockdown, as some people again look for savage ways to pass the time. And there is a photograph of a badger.
Parking charges impact on residents. A Winchester councillor has criticised the changes to parking in the city centre. As previously reported, nearly half the car parks now charge on Sundays. Councillor Fiona Mather asked why more has not been done to protect residents' spaces from the extra demand. She said, why were measures to protect central Winchester residents' parking spaces from extra demand from non-residents as a knock-on effect from the abolition of free off-road Sundays and evening parking, not in place when the new charging regime came in force? At a cabinet meeting, Councillor Martin Todd said he has not received widespread reports of this being an issue. He said free off-road Sunday and evening parking has not been abolished. As explained on the variable message signs coming into Winchester and on signs in each of the car parks, it remains free to park in park and walk car parks such as Chesil Street and Worthy Lane. Over half the car parking spaces in Winchester remain free every evening and on Sundays. We have now had 2 weekends of the new system, and as you would expect, we are monitoring the impact of these changes and improved the signage after the first week. After 2 weekends of operation, we've not received reports of widespread issues for residents or visitors, and income received from the first 2 weekends gives evidence that drivers are prepared to pay to park in the centre.
RAF technician took his own life following arrest. An RAF aircraft technician killed himself in Meon Valley Woodland after being arrested and inquest heard. Oliver James Pallett was taken in by police in February after being accused of sending abusive messages. The 37-year-old, who lived in Caterton, West Oxfordshire, was found hanging on February the 25th. Winchester Coroner's Court heard that Mr. Pallett spoke to his wife Sharon about the allegations after returning from the police station. Mrs. Pallett said that he was a golden boy and would do anything for anyone, but added, I wasn't expecting this, but he was worried about losing everything, his family and his job, which he loved very much. Area Coroner Jason Pegg said that the investigations into allegations had not found Mr. Pallett, who had served in the RAF since he was 16, to be guilty. It is thought that before his death, he travelled to his friend's address in Hampshire to deliver 2 letters. He then parked his car in Sailors Lane, Exton, and died by suicide in a nearby field. PC Baker of Hampshire Constabulary found Mr. Pallett's parked car and ordered search technician Nicholas Mansfield to scan the area. According to a post-mortem report by Dr. Hayley Burnley, consultant pathologist at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, the cause of death was hanging with no contributing factors. In a statement, Mr. Pallett's friend Steve Jones said, Ollie was a popular guy. We would speak daily. Our friendship was a kind of bromance. We would always speak about any of our problems. He never said anything that concerned me, and I had no idea of these problems. Mr. Pegg concluded death by suicide. He said Oliver was arrested on suspicion of sending abusive messages, but was able to tell his wife about the allegations and also his employers. It is clear to me he was fearful of losing his career, which he clearly loved, and also his family. Inquests are public hearings and reporters are entitled to cover them.
Kit boost for Littleton footballers. A junior football club has received a welcome boost. Littleton Junior Football Club's under-12s team, Littleton Legends, has been given support from later living specialist Life Story. The company has provided new kit, hoodies and new benches for the team, which will help the club welcome new players. Littleton Legends are on course to get promoted this season, and the arrival of their new kit has boosted team morale. Under-12s manager Paul Burgess said, We're so grateful to Life Story for their generosity. We're much more than just a football club, with a lot of the kids living for the weekends when they cannot only play football, but catch up with their teammates. As an inclusive club, we try to keep our subs pricing as low as possible to allow everyone to play, so any additional support is massively appreciated by the club and the players. The club was formed in the early 1970s, and there's a lovely picture of the Littleton Legends team, all in their blue and white striped tops, blue shorts, blue socks, apart from the goalkeeper. Well, I assume he's the goalkeeper in yellow, but he's still got his blue shorts and blue socks on, all cheering on the football field at Littleton, and very happy they look.
Managers hail successful first year for project. A supported housing project in Winchester has celebrated its first anniversary. Trinity Winchester Drop-In Centre manages Allain House on Hyde Street, which supports people in the City Council's general housing waiting list and low-risk individuals leaving prison and looking to make a new start. Residents are offered support in managing a tenancy and training to help them back into employment. In the first year, 11 people have been successfully housed, with four having moved on into their own long-term accommodation. One resident has become a health and safety representative, working alongside Trinity's staff team. Two others are volunteering to gain work experience, and another is looking to return to college. Before Allain House reopened, there was concern locally as to how it would be managed. Trinity Chief Executive Sue McKenna said, "Allain House shows what can be achieved through giving personalised support to people who want to make a positive change in their lives. We are pleased that it has been so well accepted by the local community, and we will continue our dialogue with local residents and their council representatives to take on board any concerns they may have." The building was redeveloped by former Hampshire High Sheriff Mark Thistlethwaite and offers seven self-contained flats. Residents are supported by a live-in supervisor and by Trinity's housing support team. Mr. Thistlethwaite said, "I'm delighted that the project has progressed so well in a relatively short time. Everyone agrees there is no real need to help people to turn their lives around when they have been through hard times." Do you know, that really doesn't make sense. I've got to read it again. "Everyone agrees there is a real need to help people to turn their lives around when they have been through hard times. And I'm pleased to have been able to help them through the provision of Allain House."
Fines for Halloween parties. Hampshire police attended 33 incidents over the Halloween weekend. One man in Winchester was reported for a breach of COVID-19 regulations after he allowed more than six people to gather in his house. In total, the county authority issued 92 fines on the Friday and Saturday, October the 30th and 31st. A spokesman said officers on duty over the weekend saw that it was a really happy Halloween for most. They saw that the majority were following the guidance and keeping themselves, their families and their communities safe while celebrating. However, we found a number of people still putting their social life ahead of their own health, the health of loved ones and those who are vulnerable, by hosting house parties and breaching the rule of six. Three house parties in Southampton were dispersed by officers, and a bar in Portsmouth was issued with a £1,000 fine for allowing a gathering of 12 people. Assistant Chief Constable Maggie Blythe said, "The only way we can get this virus under control and save lives is by everyone in the community sticking to the legislation and taking responsibility. The health regulations are in place to protect you, your friends, your families. Thankfully, most people in the community understand the seriousness of the situation and are following the guidance. It was great to see a lot of people enjoying Halloween in a safe way. But this weekend has proved there are always a few people who ignore what's best for them and others and make decisions that put other people's lives at risk. The majority of the incidents we attended on Saturday night were house parties, organised by adults and attended by significantly more than six people."
Uncovering Tower's long-forgotten details. Just what has been hiding under all that ivy? Work at Bishop's Waltham Palace is uncovering long-forgotten details of the West Tower. Contractors for English Heritage have been on site removing the overgrowth. Local photographer Penny Copeland said, "Building construction services have been removing ivy from the West Tower to reveal long forgotten details. They have abseiled down the walls. Other works by pay contractors this year included experimental wildflower capping on the palace perimeter walls. Well, works next year will include scaffolding to allow repointing of the stonework. The Chronicle has contacted English Heritage for further details of the work, but it has yet to respond. And there are some wonderful photographs of ancient walling and detail and flint. The flint work is extraordinary. And the over the arch, the sort of, I can't think what they call the bits there. And there's a man abseiling in his helmet and everything down the side, stripping off the ivy.
Disused pump room transformed into a virtual bar. There's a new bar in Kingsworthy, but you can only enter virtually. During lockdown, Cressida Lawler and Ali Butcher were both at a loss on what to do, as both their backgrounds are in hospitality. Not being able to sit at a bar, talk to guests, or even make cocktails was strange for the two of them. So, with the industry closed, the pair cleared out a mouldy, unused water pump room at Cressida's family house and built their dream bar. Using found materials in the garden, multiple trips to B&Q and advice from friends, the bar was completed in late June. The idea of filming cocktail tutorials came to them whilst having one too many martinis, and the next day they bought a mic, lighting and a tripod. Cressida told the Chronicle, "We wanted to show our passion for mixing drinks and educate the public. Initially, the goal was to send these videos to friends and spread a bit of joy on someone's Facebook feed, but this too soon turned into setting up a YouTube account and sharing it with the world." And there's a lovely picture of one of them, I don't know whether it's Cressida or Ali, standing behind the bar with cocktail mixers in front and a lovely array of shelves at the back with all sorts of drinks on there, whole row of little mixers and different spirits. Very joyful. Oh, and a bottle of Tattinger champagne, of course.
And this one headed, "Nature will not stop for Boris." It's that time of the year when the outdoors is continuously changing. The leaves are falling from the trees and the birds are migrating. They clearly have not listened to the new rules set out by the Prime Minister Boris Johnson. We are grateful to our Camera Club members for capturing the ever-altering outdoors across the country. Photos posted here may be used in the Hampshire Chronicle and its respective publication websites and social media channels. By posting pictures in the group, you have given consent for publication. Portraits, landscapes, wildlife shots, human interest images and news pictures, we welcome it all. This is not a competitive page, it's simply for fun. Not all photographs make it into the paper, and now I'm going to try and describe a few of them. The first one, my favourite almost, is a highland, could be a cow, could be a bull, with the shaggiest fringe you've ever seen, sitting, lying on the ground, dozing, I would say. Next to it, a picture of the most beautiful poppy field, stretching far, far into the distance, and above it, the most beautiful cloudscape, patches of blue and storm-building clouds. Below that is headed a feeding flock. I would say it's probably field fares. I don't know. And in the foreground, the forest trees and the fields behind. And it's a wonderful mistiness about it, that autumn mistiness. And below that, a kestrel in the back garden of Brian Cooper. And the kestrel's plumage, it almost reflects the colours of the beech leaves changing. It's just quite beautiful. And the cathedral grounds, again, with all the beech leaves falling and the wonderful colours of the coppers and golds, and another wonderful woodland, which is still green, but you can see the copper colours and the browns and the yellows coming through. And then some toadstools, I wouldn't call them mushrooms, and extraordinary, like a fairy garden with some very delicate green leaves around them and some rocks and the base of a tree. And I think that's all for now.
Resilience shown on the High Street. Things have been bad on Winchester High Street, but they could be worse, and the situation is getting better with businesses showing great resilience and increasing optimism. So says the latest Business Barometer report for Winchester Business Improvement District. Research by John Kind of Winchester Business School and Sarah Arnold of Consultants Secret Genius have analysed feedback from 56 BID members in the city centre, including shops, cafes, pubs, restaurants and professional services such as accountants. Their report, done before the new lockdown, concludes, despite facing unprecedented challenges, big businesses continue to show great determination and resilience. The prediction for their 2020 performance is much more optimistic than 3 months ago, as the reduction in the third quarter sales was much less than in earlier quarters. It calls for retailers to boost their online presence, with national polls saying 70% of shoppers are reluctant to do their Christmas shopping in shops this year. Several shops have closed their doors for the final time since the lockdown, including Laura Ashley, Edinburgh Woolen Mill, West Cornwall Pasty Company and Starbucks. The report found that all those polled expected to survive, compared to 87% previously. Some 88% expect to re-employ furloughed staff, compared to 79% last time. The median change in actual takings in the first 9 months of 2020 is 25% down on the same period in 2019, and that was 3% up on the previous year. In the previous quarter, the drop in sales was 50%. So far, no national chains questioned have made staff redundant, compared with 19% of independents and 25% in hospitality. Footfall into city centre outlets fell by half in January to September 2020 compared with the same period last year, showing how severe the impact of lockdown was. On empty shops on the high street, the vacancy rate has nearly doubled this year. Currently it's 10.1%, up from 7.8% in last quarter and 5.3% at the start of the year. Nationally, The Times said the move away from retail will continue, with landlords seeking to convert empty shops into offices and flats. The Centre for Retail Research said 1 in 10 shops will never be used again as retail outlets. As much as 10% of retail floor space might need to be repurposed.
Councillors defeat excluding motion. A motion to criminalise the act of unauthorised encampment across the district split Winchester City councillors. At a cabinet meeting, Tory councillor Hugh Lumbey put forward the proposal to stop travellers residing in prohibited spaces. This sparked a debate, with some members wanting to protect their ward residents and others looking at the implications on the community. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Lib Dem, said, "These proposals are aimed at the travelling community, but it goes deeper. It will essentially criminalise the actions of the homeless, those who are rough sleeping or living in their cars. This will shut them away and make it even more difficult to help them. This method is not even supported by the police and is simply passing the buck to someone else. There has to be a better way." Councillor Kathleen Becker added, "I have some very serious concerns about this. The motion has been under scrutiny. There has been no consultation. The pros and cons have not been weighed up, and the human rights of those impacted have not been considered. I urge you to see this group as part of our community. They're not just a side group separate from everyone else. They are part of the Winchester community. This is excluding people. This is a serious and complex issue." The motion also looked to criminalise the act of entering upon land as a trespasser with the purpose of residing there in a vehicle. Police currently need a court order to ask people in unauthorised camps to leave. Councillor Lumbey said, "I'm not saying our superb officers don't do a wonderful job already, but it takes up a lot of time, around 5 days, and a lot of money. Residents are often left feeling uneasy, living in fear by these camps." The motion was voted down by 23 councillors. 15 voted in favour.
Police finding it hard to keep up. Police are finding it hard to keep up with government changes as England enters a second lockdown, Hampshire Police Federation claims. The nation went into a second lockdown on November the 5th, which brought with it police powers to fine people breaking the rules, as in the first lockdown. Hampshire Police Federation has said that officers are finding it hard to keep up with the changes, but want to do their public service in helping the country get through this. Zoe Wakefield, chairman of the Hampshire Police Federation, said that despite the county's infection rate being under control, the announcement of the second lockdown has thrown it all up in the air again. She said it's hard to keep up with the constant changes. Everyone had got their heads around the rule of six, I think that was one of the simpler rules to understand, and it was going reasonably well. We're quite fortunate in this area. Our infection rates, even though they've been going up, have been sort of in control. But the announcement at the weekend has now thrown that all up in the air again, she added. She said that even though it was difficult for officers, they've also got a sense of duty. They want to be a part of it. They want to do their bit to help and want to do their public service in helping the country get through this. Miss Wakefield said that they were all waiting to see what the legislation would look like and what new laws they would have to police. In an interview with Sky News, National Police Federation Chairman John Apter said, "We're stretched like never before because we're policing in a way like never before. But in protecting the NHS from being overwhelmed, what I don't want is for policing to be overwhelmed, because that's a real risk."
Leisure centre build hit by COVID-19. Contractors working on the new Winchester Leisure Centre have tested positive for coronavirus. Building work continues at the Bar End site as two of the Wilmot Dixon team self-isolate. A spokesperson for Winchester City Council has confirmed the news but said the construction due to finish in the spring had not been seriously affected. They said two of Wilmot Dixon's subcontracted staff working at the new Winchester Sport and Leisure Park development have reported that they have tested positive for COVID-19. Wilmot Dixon has reported that to the council, and the operatives have contacted track and trace as required by government guidelines and are currently self-isolating. The project itself continues to work to safe operating procedures advised by the Construction Leadership Council. The Hampshire Chronicle contacted the council after receiving an anonymous tip-off.
Zoo facing biggest challenge to date. Marwell Zoo said it's facing its toughest challenge in its 50-year history as it's forced to close temporarily. Marwell Zoo near Winchester has now shut due to the second national lockdown, and as a result, the funds which the organisation would normally receive have dried up, but the costs of running and maintaining the zoo still remain. James Cretney, chief executive of Marwell Wildlife, the charity that runs the zoo, has now spoken out about the challenge of the charity faces. He said, "The coronavirus crisis has significantly impacted our charity zoo, and though we are undoubtedly fortunate to have opened for 4 months, we're now facing the toughest challenge in our nearly 50-year history. When we're closed, our daily costs remain incredibly high, as the responsibility of looking after our animals and their environments to the highest standards doesn't change. We've made use of measures to help us through the short-term financial impacts of this crisis, such as the government's loan scheme, a coronavirus business interruption loan, and the furlough scheme. However, the challenge ahead is significant." Marwell is home to more than 140 species and would normally welcome 500,000 visitors each year to the 140-acre site near Coldon Common. A Just Giving fundraising page has now been set up to support the zoo through the tough period, and through this it has managed to raise over £65,000. Mr. Cretney added, "We've been overwhelmed by the generosity and unwavering support of our community during these unsettling times. We are confident we can emerge from this crisis in a strong position so that we can secure the joy of visiting our much-loved charity zoo for generations to come."
Council ready for lockdown two. Winchester City Council is ready for the second lockdown, according to civic chiefs. Since the announcement on November the 1st, staff have been preparing to support the community. At a council meeting last Wednesday, the leader and chief executive gave a rundown of the support in place. Leader Councillor Lucille Thompson said, "The council will be working very hard to ensure our key services stay running. We know that we will have to support the community even more this time around, as this lockdown is in very different circumstances. There will be long dark nights and the weather will be less inviting. We must all do what we can. For the business also, we had just been doing our best to help open up the high street and get them prepped for Christmas. It must be devastating. Officers have been in contact with parish councils and community groups to make sure they are ready to offer support." Chief Executive Laura Taylor said that all frontline services will be maintained. We will support the individuals and groups that are identified as being most at risk. We will also support those businesses that have been asked to close. The City Council has made sure enough services to deliver food, medicine and other essentials have been set up for vulnerable people. Key workers will be able to park for free across the district, and the park and ride service will continue to run. Ms. Taylor said, "We have ensured our teams are ready. They have swiftly set up payments for people in need. The council is ready, and we are in this as a community." Both council-run leisure centres, River Park in Winchester and Meadowside in Whiteley in the southern parishes, will now remain closed until the end of lockdown.
City Council steps in. The Winchester community stepped in where the government failed during the October half-term. City Council leader, Councillor Lucille Thompson, criticised MPs' decision to vote down free food vouchers, but also thanked her colleagues and businesses for helping out. She said that no local children went hungry during the school holiday, thanks to heroic people across the district. She said, "We were incredibly disappointed the government decided to vote down the voucher system, but I can happily report that Winchester City Council stepped in where the government failed. The City Council supported both Winchester Basics Bank and the Meon Valley Food Bank, even with extra money where needed. I'd like to thank the staff for such a quick response. It really was all hands to the pump." The council plans to help out again during the December school holidays. Councillor Thompson added, "It was also really heartening to see the local businesses, charities and individuals help out. So I'd like to say thanks to them too, particularly as people are going through an extremely difficult time. Looking ahead at the worsening scenario, we will be calling on the government to make sure no children go hungry at Christmas."
Working to protect Hampshire chalk streams. Meon Valley's MP has met the Test and Itchen Association to discuss how to protect chalk streams. Flick Drummond met the association's executive director, Jeremy Legg, along with City Councillor Hugh Lumby. The association has 600 members, including riparian owners, riverkeepers and clubs. This was an informative visit that really showed me the dedication of those who care so much about these chalk streams, but also of the modern challenges they face from pollution and water abstraction, she said. Ms. Drummond was told the association measures water quality by the numbers and varieties of fish flies that can be found. The rivers were healthier in the 1970s than today. She was also told Natural England is discussing ideas for boosting rivers, including the reintroduction of voles and beavers. But this would be opposed by fishermen because such schemes would silt up and slow down the rivers, making it an unattractive habitat for the fish stock. The association added it was pleased an all-party parliamentary group for chalk streams had been set up and that Flick is a member. And there is a photograph of Flick Drummond again in her nice waterproof green coat and it's extremely green scene, obviously, by one of the chalk streams herself and Hugh Lumby and the other person, Jeremy Legg.
Chronicle's longest reader. He survived the Second World War, has lived for 100 years, and he may well be the Chronicle's most dedicated reader. Bert Wakeley has seen more in his life than almost everyone else on the planet. On November the 7th, he celebrated his milestone birthday and threw back the years as he recalled even his earliest memories. He said, "The key to a long life? Well, I've never smoked, so I think that helped. Other than that, I've had a normal run for a man my age." The centenarian who's purchased every copy of the Chronicle since 1961 left school and worked for Great Western Railway as an apprentice engineer. He went to night school and qualified as an engineering draftsman. And when war broke out, he volunteered for the Territorial Army and was sent to Java, where he was captured by the Japanese and held as a prisoner in a Borneo camp for 3.5 years. He said, "All youngsters today have a different approach to things. Everything was a lot stricter when I was younger. You can do what you like nowadays." When the war was over, Bert married his wife Muriel in Nottingham and they had two daughters. He then went to work as an engineering draftsman in a Welsh hospital for 11 years, before moving to Winchester Hospital, where he stayed for 23 years, until he retired as regional engineer. Bert remembers doing most of the plans for the extensions to the RHCH, and recalls speaking with consultants, doctors and nurses. "Now what I do is reading mainly," he said. "I've also got a large garden where I do the occasional bit of gardening. And I also still enjoy going to art classes in the city." And Bert still drives to these classes with the U3A group. He was also secretary of the Southampton Far East Prisoner of War Club for 20 years until it disbanded. When retired, he and Muriel had many interests until she passed away at the age of 94. Since COVID-19, he's had to stay at home where he looks after himself with the help of a gardener and family members. And there's a lovely photograph of Albert Wakeley at a Buckingham Palace garden party, looking very dapper in his blazer with his medals, tie, walking stick. Looks very smart and very fit.
Seeing as we're on this theme, I shall continue it. Former mayor set to celebrate milestone. A former mayor of Winchester is about to celebrate his 100th birthday. Major Douglas F. Coville, MBE, DCM, is due to reach the milestone on Saturday, November 14th. Dougie, as he's known by his friends, moved with his family to West Sussex in 2001. He's now in a care home in reasonably good health, say friends. His only regret is, in his own words, "It is not a good year to be 100. He represented Alresford for the Conservatives in the City Council in the 1980s and lived at Ladycroft. It is not known if he is the first mayor to reach the unique milestone. Dougie was born in Croydon and joined the army somewhat under age in 1937. His regiment, the 10th Royal Hussars, PWO, had recently returned from Tidworth from a tour in India, and due to his small stature, he was nicknamed Chota. I'm not sure why that. The 10th Hussars, part of the 1st Armoured Division, were sent to Normandy in late May 1940 in an attempt to support France, but they were heavily outgunned by German forces, and after fierce fighting near the Somme, the regiment withdrew from Brest on June the 19th. In late 1941, the 10th Hussars sailed via the Cape to North Africa. Dougie was by now a tank troop sergeant, and in this frontline role he fought in all the 8th Army battles in the Western Desert, Libya, Tunisia and Italy from then until the end of the war in May 1945. He was wounded twice and mentioned in dispatches. In 1945 he was awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal for conspicuous bravery. The regiment moved first to Austria and then to Lübeck on the Baltic coast of Germany. Dougie met a German girl, Inga Jessica. They married in 1947 and subsequently had two daughters. In 1959, he was commissioned as a quartermaster in the 10th Royal Hussars. Dougie retired from the army in 1970. He played an active role in the affairs of the country and beyond as a leading Freemasons in England and Germany, chairman of the Distinguished Conduct Medalist League and county president of the Royal British Legion. Inga died in 2013, but Dougie takes pleasure in seeing his daughters and their husbands, three grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. And we have a picture of him here in his mayoral outfit, looking very smart with a beautiful ruffled sort of white cravat, jabot, I think the word is.
A34 stabbing. A man was stabbed during an altercation with another motorist on the A34 near Kingsworthy. The incident occurred sometime between 4:30 and 6:30 p.m. last Wednesday. Both vehicles, a silver Mercedes S400 and a silver or grey Vauxhall car-derived van, had pulled over on the northbound carriageway after the Kingsworthy junction, and an incident took place which resulted in both being injured. One of the men, a 48-year-old, attended hospital with stab injuries after he was found in his car at the Gladstone Street car park in Winchester at 6:52 p.m. He was discharged the same day following treatment. A police spokesperson said, "Were you travelling on the A34 around this time? Did you see anything suspicious? Or do you have dashcam footage that may have captured this incident or either vehicle?"
End on a theme. Serious collision. A person is fighting for their life following a serious collision involving a motorcyclist and a car on the A272. Emergency services were called to the stretch of road near Chesfoot Head shortly after 12 p.m. on Tuesday. Three people were treated at the scene. One of those suffered multiple life-threatening injuries and the other sustained non-life-threatening injuries. Both were taken to University Hospital Southampton. An ambulance service spokesperson said, "We had on scene our Hazardous Area Response Team, HART, two ambulance officers, two ambulance crews, and the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, assessing and treating three patients. The road between Petersfield Road and Chesfoot Head Car Park was closed for a number of hours."
Online art sales for charity. Artists from Winchester, Alsford, Andover, Alton and Basingstoke art clubs are supporting charity fundraisers who are looking for innovative ways of raising money during the pandemic. Local artists have been invited to exhibit their work on a new website to help raise funds for family support charity Homestart Winchester, while at the same time being able to sell their artwork now that so many exhibitions have been cancelled. The brainchild of Winchester photographer Michelle Quinton, she has joined with former Homestart trustee Sue Gentry, who is also chairman of the Alsford Art Society. Michelle came up with the idea of selling art online when she saw the charity's plea for help in the local press during the first lockdown. "It seems such an excellent solution," said Sue. "We've recruited artists from across Hampshire who are selling paintings in every medium, prints and even mosaics. With Christmas fast approaching, people are shopping online more than ever. This is a brilliant way not just to support artists who no longer have exhibitions, but to also raise funds for struggling families. Homestart supports families referred to them by GPs and social workers due to social isolation, poor mental health, overcrowded housing, multiple births, bereavement, illness of a parent or child, or because life is simply a struggle. The charity usually supports these families with trained volunteers who visit the families once a week for 2 hours or through family groups until they're back on their own two feet, usually 6 to 12 months. Homestart Winchester supports families with one or more children under the age of 5 within a 12-mile radius of the city. And there are two delightful photographs of artworks. One is a still life of tomatoes in an octopus bowl, and that's by Amelia Pike. And the second one is a charming painting of a winter's day in St. Cross, and it shows St. Cross Church across what appears to be a little mist-shrouded field. And that's by Jack Harding. And I should say, Jack is the son of Jane Harding, one of our readers, who you'll probably hear in the next couple of weeks. That concludes our extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to Nikki.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.